Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Heller Theater has always been a company that's taken on risky and challenging new work by national and regional playwrights. This past evening, they premiered a brand new piece by local playwright David Blakely. The Light Fantastic or In the Wood is the first production to inaugurate a new programming philosophy from the formerly city-run, now community-run theater group. That philosophy is to promote local playwriters. Blakely, who is the theater program director at Rogers State, is the company's first playwright in residence. Blakely is a director, actor, designer, musician, and award-winning playwright, and he recently received the Kennedy Center Medallion for his contributions to the teaching and producing of theater. In The Light, Fantastic, or In the Wood, we meet seven denizens of the West End Tap Room, each with their own sorrows, each with their own dreams, with nowhere to go. One of the regulars has stopped showing up and has left instructions on what to do when that occurs. Then three strangers and a priest walk into the bar. And the rest of the evening could be one big joke, or maybe not. I'm joined by Blakely and Heller Theater President Susan Apker to talk about the piece, which is a collaboration between Heller Theater and Midwestern Theater Troupe, and the new focus of local theatrical works by the company. The Heller Theater and Midwestern Theater Troupe present The Light Fantastic or In the Wood by David Blakely, with continuing performances tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday afternoon at the Nightingale Theater. Susan and David, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Susan, I know Heller Theater has been in the process of reinventing itself in a way. I know you've always done new work, but really the focus for this production that's coming up this weekend and for future productions is an emphasis on local work. How did this come about?
We have been working toward this. We had considered it when we were divested from the city, going to this immediately. And we decided to kind of make it a more gentle change, more gradual change. And we've just decided that this is the time to do it. And so this year, we added a playwright-in-residence position, which is David Blakely.
Hello.
And we're so excited to have him. And we kind of made our first step last year producing a play by Emily Adams, who is a local playwright, and then added the playwright-in-residence this year and are now producing David's play. And we just felt that there were so many theaters now that are doing modern contemporary work that we needed to redefine our niche to make ourselves a more valuable asset to the city.
You know, and I think that this sort of reflects something about the maturity of the Tulsa theater scene, because I know for a long time Heller Theater was, if you wanted to see something that had been critically acclaimed in New York within maybe the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, it was the Heller Theater that was taking the chance on doing that. Mm-hmm. Of course, now there are more doing that.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you've also done local and original work throughout the history of Heller Theater from time to time.
Yes.
And you've had open calls for manuscripts.
There's been a long history of doing short plays at Heller. And then they had a national play festival for a while, and that grew by such leaps and bounds that it got to the point where no one could read 600 scripts. We had one volunteer who was able to make it through all 600 scripts. So we decided to scale back and go back to our short play festival and started to work from that to longer works and an emphasis on local talent. And we hope to keep growing and gradually encompass and welcome national playwrights as well. But right now we want to focus on our local people.
Well, we want to talk about The Light Fantastic or In the Wood, which is the new play by David, opening this weekend, premiering this weekend. But before we do, you mentioned, you know, Heller being divested from the city. How has that process been as far as, I know it's been difficult, but, you know, how has the theater come through it?
We've come through it fine. We're still alive and well. It's a whole different ballgame where we are a nonprofit now. And we have to pay for every single thing like every other theater does. We used to be known as the economical theater, or the lowest ticket in town, and we've had to raise our rates because now we have to pay for our location for performances like everyone else has. It's also been a little more difficult because we don't have a staff anymore. We were able to rely on the city staff for the bulk of the administration of the theater. So we've had to take that on a volunteer
process. Has that been a big learning curve for you?
It has, very much so. And it's still a learning curve. But we are gradually getting ourselves in line, and we're at a pretty good point now.
Now, for this production, you're actually working with a Midwestern theater troupe as well. So is this going to be something we're going to see more from the Heller Theater as far as collaborating?
I do think one of our goals is to collaborate with more theaters throughout the city. The first show of our next season will be a performance art piece done as a co-production with the Tulsa Latino Theater. So it's something that we're looking to do more of as well, yes.
Well, let's turn to the play. Now, David, you're the playwright in residence. This is the first piece you've written for this company, in this role at least.
Yes. I'm very thankful to Heller Theater to create a playwright in residence in which the playwright is actually in residence, as opposed to being in Ireland or Chicago.
And having this way to do your work, but being on site for the most part, does that add something to
it? Is
to the process?
I've been to rehearsals. I know the actors in the area. I interact with a number of the theater folk here in town, a lot of the theater folk here in town. So it's a joy to be able to get recognition, not just from me, but for anybody who would be in the playwright in residence position, that a local playwright is getting an opportunity. And kudos to Heller Theater for expanding that. The other two playwrights that are going to be featured next season are both local playwrights.
Yeah. Now, as playwright in residence, are you writing a play a year or
I write a play a year anyway, but
Right.
I've done a lot of things. I did a playwriting workshop with local community members that culminated in a reading of some of their work. Some of the shorts that have been entered into the 8th Annual Heller Shorts Festival are from the playwrights that I helped to workshop some of their work. It's a learning ground, shall we say?
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about The Light Fantastic or In the Wood. Sort of a long title, and the premise sounds like a setup for a joke.
It absolutely is. The Light Fantastic or In the Wood, it takes place in a bar. It has seven sort of stranded castaways. Some of them know each other. Some of them are there for the first time. The connection that they have with each other and among each other comes from how they interact and the stories that they tell each other, the connections they make that way. In terms of, you know, if I were to say, you know, what the play is about, I'd have to say it's about 90 minutes, because really what it's about is a bunch of different things. There's no single plot line that runs through it.
Is it just an evening in the West End Tap Room, as it's called? And what's happened is one of the regulars, and I assume it's like this sort of community of bar denizens, if you will.
Barflies.
And one has stopped showing up, right?
Yes. And one of the things that happens is that the person who is no longer there has, this has happened a lot during the course of him being there, and has set up sort of this ritual of having a fake wake for the person who's not been there for a couple of weeks, an excuse in order to drink. If they come back, then they have a, you know, many happy returns and another excuse to drink. But it's not really about drinking. It isn't about that. It's about camaraderie. It's about connection. It's about how do we do that.
And it's one of those places of community that increasingly is pretty rare in American society, where you have people from different strata, from different places. And I assume, is that a part of the
story? That is part of it, absolutely. The seven people are from all walks of life. And you're right, absolutely. The number of places that we can go to gather together is sinking, perhaps because we are becoming a more isolated society.
We seek out our own as opposed to meeting a wide range of folks.
Right.
So what was the inspiration for this?
Well, there's a story that has been in the play ever since I conceived of it. It is a story about that happened to me. I'm a musician, and I was asked to be a musician at Opryland USA in Nashville the year that Elvis Presley died. And I didn't work with any of the entertainment folks. I worked with the restaurants. I was a strolling minstrel in the restaurants. And the entertainment division had to have a special meeting once Elvis Presley died, because with the exception of the 1890s show and the jazz show, every other one of their 11 shows had an Elvis song in it from gospel to country to rock and roll to I Hear America Singing because of how influential it was. And the shows would stop because people in the audience would openly weep when it got to singing an Elvis song. So they said,
not the most conducive atmosphere for a theme park,
right?
Where you're supposed to have fun.
Right. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, and then everybody would wail. So they met, and they decided that they would cut the Elvis songs from the show. And I was not part of that entertainment group. I was with food and beverage. And so I continued to play Elvis songs. And when you're out there and you're the only one doing Elvis songs in the theme of Opryland was music, and they needed to hear Elvis songs, I was getting huge tips and came out of it feeling kind of bad. That story was in the play. One of the characters had a story similar to that. There is a character in it who's an Elvis impersonator. And that story was in the play all the way up until the final rewrite of the play. So what I just told you is no longer in the play, but it was the inspiration for the play.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So why did this story not make the cut in the final edition? Was it extraneous to the bigger story that you ended up telling in the play?
Well, as I said, it's about connections, and I tried another story, and it seemed to connect better with the other folks, the characters in the play. And we tried it out. It seemed to work. The fellow who tells that story is a magnificent job doing it. He's Steve Barker, who plays Johnny in the show, and we went with it.
Now, there are two ways that a playwright will often have his work performed, and one is you do a play, you write a play, you get it in sort of a finished form, you workshop it maybe, and then you send it off somewhere for a director and a company to do it. You might come in a couple of times to take a look at it as it comes together. But it sounds like this is a very different creation. This is the other way of a play in which the playwright, the director, the cast are interacting completely and daily. And I assume there's been a lot of rewrites in the course of this.
There has been rewrites.
And what's that experience like as opposed to that thing where you send off your work and it gets produced? And
I think that is a way that we sometimes see it happening. But a lot of the good playwrights that are out there in the world now have a community that they go to. People that they trust, actors that they want to have do their work. The testing ground is a little bit more than just friends sitting around and doing stuff. And a lot of the playwrights I know from, you know, Oregon and
so that's
Seattle.
Always been the case. So that's always been the case for you, where you've been hands-on, sort of involved every day.
Yes,
in
that a lot. I think that the first play that I got produced was a play when I was an undergrad at the University of Oklahoma, and I wrote a short one-act play for the Street Players Theater in Norman, and I wrote it for the particular actors that were in that.
Now, Susan, as president of the Heller Theater, you're not involved. I mean, you're involved, but you're not involved in that actual day-to-day creative process. But what has the experience been like having David as a part of, you know, every rehearsal, the rewrites for your performers?
It's been tremendously advantageous because they're able to go to the source when they have questions about character or if they have problems with lines. So they've been able to tap immediately into someone who can help them right away.
As you mentioned, David, this is a process that this is pretty much your working process when you create a new play. But
yes.
How much has this play changed since the first finished draft, if you will?
It hasn't changed all that much, in part because the play has individual stories that work, hopefully, by themselves. Usually where the rewrites come is when the stories are colliding with each other, so transitions, things like that. I did have to rewrite one of the characters who early on in the play was not developed. Later on in the play has a lot of things going on, but it wasn't set up. So it wasn't until I saw it on its feet and saw the actor sort of, what do I do here? You're giving me.
Now, how important is seeing the actor that's going to inhabit this character that's in your mind's eye? Obviously, the director has their own idea of who that character is in their own mind's eye, and that's your job is to work with that. Does that change the arc of the character?
I think that one of the things that I look for as a playwright is I try to create a whole. And one of the things that each of the and there's seven actors in it, and each of the individual actors in this are following that thread. And because that's the only thing they're following, I think that they become better experts at that character than I do. And sometimes you just rewrite. I have a friend who has a beautiful play that when auditions came for it, the best actor for one of the roles was an English woman. And so he rewrote a Southern woman into an Englishman or English woman. And it was an amazing tour de force for that actress.
And we think of those two species as being pretty removed from one another.
Exactly.
Did that playwright actually change all the language?
He changed the
way in which they communicate.
Yes.
As much as how they communicate.
Yes. And he has a marvelous ear for doing stuff like that.
Well, the Heller Theater Company and Midwestern Theater Troupe are joining together to present The Light Fantastic, or In the Wood, by David Blakely, my guest today, who is the playwright in residence for Heller Theater. I'm also joined by the president of Heller Theater, Susan Apker. Now, Susan, you've been watching the rehearsal process. David's given us a little sort of view of the play. What strikes you as most interesting about this particular piece?
The stories between the people. The connections between the people.
So are these just bar conversations, or are they the typical stories you're going to hear in a bar, or are they heightened magical realism sort of stories that a play often will do to make that bar conversation a little more interesting than most?
I would say it's somewhere between the two.
Yeah. Give us a taste of what this is about. So
there is a little bit of magical realism, as you suggested. There are characters who have never met. There's a character who's never met anybody, and yet he manages to know everybody's name.
And there are characters whose stories nicely collide, shall we say, into the same story.
Now, I know the actor community within the city is everybody knows one another. Mm-hmm. How has that worked with the collaboration with the Midwestern Theater Troupe? Because you have a mixture of people that I associate one with one theater and some with the other. How's that worked out?
It's been great, and we've worked with a lot of the same people before. Our last Tate-winning show had a lot of Midwestern folks in it, and so Midwestern and Heller work really well together. So that's been a great advantage for us. Of course, John Crunkleton has done so much for the Henthorne Performing Arts Center for Clark and Heller.
And he's one of the actors and the set designer for the show.
Right, and Sarah Crunkleton is the director. It's great to have people that you trust outside of your own company.
Yeah. So now this is a question I usually ask a director, but can you tell us a little bit about the cast? Who's in the cast and what are they adding to the piece?
Well, let's start with Billie Sue Thompson is in it, and mm-hmm. she has been an actor for quite some time.
Longtime director as well and teacher at Broken Arrow.
Yes, and she's just doing an amazing job. She says that there aren't a lot of parts out there for older women, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And she was happy to have this part, and she likes it. She thinks it's great fun. Tim Hunter plays the bartender, and he has been in four shows of mine. I'm eager to work with him at any time.
When you have an actor like that you've worked with quite a bit, does that sort of shape how that character fleshes out? And as the rehearsal process goes, you sort of maybe adjust him knowing what that actor can do?
Yes. Yes, I do. I will say that flat out. When I discovered that he was interested in doing it and I was doing a rewrite, there were a couple of things with his voice in my head, and I said, yeah, he can do this.
I know Adrian Alexander from the University of Tulsa Library he's a very busy actor and doing a lot of acting, and he's in the show as
he
well.
He is. He plays the Elvis impersonator. So that's
in a quite anti-stereotypically grumpy character, which Adrian is certainly not, and I know because I used to work for Adrian.
So, yes, he's doing a great job. Sarah Wildman is in it as well. Angela Adams is in it. I've already mentioned Steve, John Crunkleton.
And so these are the barflies and the bartender. Basically,
yes,
that's the story.
It is. Three of them are the strangers that walk into the bar, mm-hmm. Just like the joke. And the play is a lot about the difference between jokes and stories and how jokes can connect us as well as stories connecting us.
And so I assume this is a comedy in a way, or is it a sort of a dramedy?
It's funny.
Yeah.
You're asking the playwright now, so I...
You'll have to ask the
audience. Oh, I wrote some really great funny stuff there. I have no idea if it's funny. I intended it to be a comedy, yes.
Yeah.
Was it funnier when you heard it read than you anticipated it being?
This play is really hard to have in your head because the conversations bounce all over the bar. You get a snippet here and a snippet there. And so the first time I actually ever heard it was with actors. And I think it works. Once we had the actors in place, we started to tweak how we would do those scenes so that they would make a little bit more sense.
Well, I think if you're bouncing conversations all around the, quote, bar, then it's a matter of timing as well.
Yes, it is.
And is that where the main tweaks have come in, and just timing what you're saying?
I built up one of the characters a little bit more. As I said, I replaced one of the key monologues in it. And yes, but there's a lot of things that we decided that we were doing. Once we got it in there, we decided whether or not it should be raining or not outside, for example. Once we decided that it was raining, then I wrote the rain into the play as being an important aspect of it.
How do you spend, like when you birth this new play, how do you spend opening night? What's your process? Are you watching the audience?
I always watch the audience. That's where I think the play takes place. The play takes place between the audience and the performance. How they interact, that interaction I think is prime. And so yes, I watch the audience. I usually am happy-go-lucky all the way up until the house lights dim, and then I'm a nervous wreck. I wish I weren't there.
Yeah, but yet, and I assume, given this is the first set of performances, mm-hmm. you'll rewrite afterwards. Is that the plan? Is that how you work? And generally, get a gauge of how an audience receives the play, and then figure out what works, what can be tweaked and improved.
Right. Oscar Wilde did this on the opening night of The Importance of Being Earnest. He paced back behind the audience. He heard them laughing at his jokes. And then there came the point in time where the plot kicked in and the audience laughed. And he goes, yes, that's what I needed to know, is if they followed the plot of the play. So what I will do is I will see where the audience is in it and where they're not, and where I think they should be in it and they aren't, then I will go back and circle those things and figure out how to make those areas work.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with The Light Fantastic or
Thank
In
you.
The Wood, which continues tonight and runs Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at the Nightingale Theater, not at Hinthorn. And is this going to be your new home from now on for Heller Theater?
Or? At least for next season. We have dates at Nightingale for our productions in the fall and the spring.
All right. Well, we wish great success with the Heller and also this production. David and Susan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Susan Apker is the president of Heller Theater. David Blakely, their playwright in residence. His play, The Light Fantastic or In the Wood, premiered last night and continues with performances tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday afternoon at the Nightingale Theater. The production is a co-production of Heller Theater and Midwestern Theater Troupe. For information, visit hellertheaterco.com or call 918-609-0482. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Janet Pearson and Jeff Nix.
Back in the early days of television, local newscasts consisted of news, weather, and sports. But there was no provision for breaking weather bulletins. No crawls across the bottom of the screen, no colorful maps. There was the weather segment, then no further weather news until the next newscast. So, if you wanted information on tornadoes, blizzards, and such, you went to AM radio, which had the capability to go live.
If it was a winter storm with snowfall, we kids listened for one thing. Is school canceled? We didn't care about details. To us, so there was going to be 6 feet of snow on top of a layer of ice and temperatures below zero. That was our folks' concern. What we wanted to know was about school closing, and that information came in alphabetical order. Avant, Barnsdall, Bowlegs, Catoosa, etc. Why did we have to live in Tulsa, which is almost at the end of the alphabet?
But if it was tornado season and there was tornado danger, different story. The radio would say things like, there's a strong likelihood of tornado along and 40 miles each side of a line from Bokoshi west to Cimarron City, like anyone but bus drivers and traveling salesmen knew where the heck those towns were, much less what was 40 miles either side of a line between them.
Local television nowadays has weather spotting systems with military sounding names like Viper 6 or 21 or 200 and so on, and storm spotters and even helicopters that can pinpoint exactly where the tornado is. So instead of along and 40 miles each side of a line from wherever to wherever, we get Mr. and Mrs. Robert Tannehill at 2449 South 49th West Avenue. It's right over your house. Get out now.
Nowadays, winter storms are big ratings business for local TV stations. So, before the first snowflake hits the ground, programming is interrupted and all 27 members of the TV weather team are spread out over a large area in their colorful weather gear with the station logo all over it, reporting that they're in such and such place but haven't seen any snow yet, so they'll switch to another weather team member who's standing in front of a bridge or a highway or an intersection where it's not snowing yet either.
Our suggestion? Get free of dependency on all of the fancy schmancy local TV station weather folderol and install your own personal weather forecasting and analyzing system. It's called a window that opens and closes.
That's right. Install a huge window, or maybe use one you already have. To check temperature, stick your head out the window. To check for rain, see if your head gets wet. To see if it's going to rain, look at the clouds approaching your house.
For snow, see if snow lands on your head. For wind, see if your glasses blow off. That's windy. If your neighbor's big dog blows by, that's really windy. If your neighbor's big dog blows by two or three times, that's a tornado.
And as for forecasting tomorrow's weather, if the wind's out of the north, become email friends with someone in Kansas City and email them to see what's going on there. Wind's out of the south, email someone in Dallas. Long-range forecast, email someone in Denver or Houston.
End dependence on local TV for weather information. Take charge of your own personal forecast whenever you need it, not just in between commercials on local TV.
And if you're a savvy stock investor, you might want to load up on companies that make windows.
Janet Pearson and Jeff Nix are husband and wife. Janet, a former editorial columnist for the Tulsa World. Jeff Nix, a local attorney, and our contributors to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.